Welcome to the Holistic Wealth Podcast. I'm your host, Keisha Blair, wife, mother of three, author of Holistic Wealth, and founder of the Institute on Holistic Wealth. The show will showcase various experts in the key pillars of holistic wealth. Each week, we deliver the best information on how to become holistically wealthy and live your best life. Welcome to the Holistic Wealth Podcast with Keisha Blair. I have a special guest with me today, and that's Taylor Lindsay Noel. And Taylor is the founder and CEO of A Cup of Tea, a great brand of loose organic leaf tea that was also featured on Oprah's Favorite Things for 2020. So welcome, Taylor. It's so great to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your podcast tonight. I'm excited.
Me too. And I just wanted to say, I've been following your story. It's so inspirational. And to be honest, once I saw it, I just had to have you on the show. So I just wanted to get started with, of course, the brand and the business and just the idea of it all and how that got started.
Of course. So I started Cup of Tea just over 2 years ago. The idea, I kind of stumbled into it. I would have never thought that I would own a luxury loose leaf tea company. That just, it's not something I think people, when you're a child, you wake up and you're like, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. But I was in university and I had a podcast, and I would interview people over a cup of tea, because in my life, the best conversations in my household happened over a cup of tea. It's something that's so much a part of our day. And my house is the house you come to bring all friends and family together. We're kind of like the hub. So it was kind of the best way to kind of make a podcast a little bit more fun, in my opinion. And I would always review teas from David's Tea. And eventually I reached out to them to hopefully get a sponsorship or to get a free tea. And when I didn't hear back, instead of just being sad about it, I was like, okay, let me use my audience to start my own brand and market it back. And I thought I could do both at the same time, but it became very difficult. But a year into researching, I launched the business, and it's been a really crazy 2 years ever since.
I can imagine, for sure. And I have read that you actually did your undergrad in radio and television.
Yeah.
And so nothing really to do with business. And here you are today with this highly successful brand, recognized by Oprah, no less. Here you are 2 years later with something that's grown so magically. And so I wanted to just get a sense from you, because I know there were challenges. I know, you know, given that you probably didn't have the background, but you probably did a lot of research in terms of branding, manufacturing, product sourcing, of course, the gorgeous packaging. Can you tell us about how you managed to pull that off?
You know what? I am a very, very stubborn and persistent person. If I can't figure out how to do something, I will try and try and try and try again until I get it right. And you're right, I didn't have a background in business. I didn't know much about business. My mom isn't in business. So I just started Googling, YouTubing, and figuring it out step by step. I had a very clear vision from the beginning of how I wanted to market myself and position myself within a very busy crowd. But it also came with the challenges of doing some, it's very easy to copy, but it's difficult to do something brand new because you don't know if people are going to be receptive to it. It was a lot of work and really, really, really hard. I spent night up until 3 a.m. for months talking to just manufacturers, trying to figure out things, talking to different farms from around the world. So it was very difficult, but I'm really grateful for it because we've come a long way.
I think we both have in common a life-altering setback that became a defining moment. And I just want to backtrack to that a bit so you could tell our audience what that was like, because I can't imagine for someone so young, you had the Olympic dream ahead of you. You actually were on the Canadian National Olympics team and you were training for that big event and for an athlete. That's like the goal of a lifetime. Can you tell us how you think in terms of how that happened and the tremendous impact it had on you that kind of gave you that drive to do this? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, being a competitive athlete person at such a young age, you get taught work ethic and just, it's a whole different way of living. Whenever I meet another athlete, it's kind of like this just underlying sense of understanding, because when you dedicate so many years of yourself to one singular goal, it's all consuming. And it was definitely my identity at the time. And as you know, in 2008, I suffered a spinal cord injury falling off the high bar because my coach pushed me to do something that's never been done before in the world. And he withheld that information from me at the time, and I didn't want to do it, but I trusted him like a parental figure. And after about an hour of arguing and crying, I decided, you know, maybe I'm just scared, and I'm letting, like he would always say, my fear cloud my judgment. And so I trusted him. And that unfortunately led to me being paralyzed. And I've been in a wheelchair, a quadriplegic, which means I have partial or full paralysis in all of my major limbs ever since. Definitely been a very interesting ride to get where I am.
Unbelievable. Like, I'm still at the park because I'm a mother of three. When you said to me a while ago that he pushed you to do something that was like unprecedented, no one else had done it in the world. I mean, do you think it was this drive for wanting to win that motivated you?
I think he, my coach, like, he's very well known for being egotistical. And I think in his mind, like, if you teach a gymnast how to do a skill that's never been done before, it gets named after the gymnast and recognized as being coached by that coach. And I was one of the last three gymnasts he was going to be coaching ever. And I think he wanted some kind of legacy. I unfortunately was his guinea pig for it. Yeah, which had very grave consequences. Yeah.
I am so glad that you were able to bounce back, and in a big way. Like, I'm so happy. I have goosebumps all over me just listening to your story, because I think we have these rare occurrences that just happen in life. You don't see them coming, because I wrote in my book, my husband died. It's a very rare disease that he died from. Most doctors will never see it in your lifetime, you know? And so you hear about these stories, you experience them, and then you're just like, oh my gosh, can you tell me how you picked yourself back up and said, you know what, I'm going to live this dream. I'm not going to let this stop me. I'm going to live my life. Can you tell me?
I was very, very lucky. And I recognize how lucky I am to have such a great support system. And I know everyone says that, but like my family and friends really, and strangers, to be honest, really rallied behind me. It was a big story here in the city at the time. And so I had a lot of support from my community, especially because it came like in a time that was 2 weeks before the Beijing Olympics. So it was kind of, everyone was focused on sports. And, you know, we always hear about these buses, but you don't hear about the underbelly of, you know, the sport world. And I had a lot of support and continue to have a lot of support. And that is 1,000% the reason why I'm here today and able to do what I do.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I read somewhere that your mother was the backbone of that support, something that I can completely resonate with. As I said in my book, that she was my cheerleader. And I know we both come from, you know, Caribbean heritage, and we have strong mothers who are literally just cheerleaders. And so for you, you know, as you spoke, I just remember reading that. Can you tell us a bit more about your mom? I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, my mom, she's an incredible single mom. She always made sure that I had the best of everything in life, and even if that meant sacrificing on her end. She wasn't one of those, because sometimes people ask, like, was your mom one of those stage moms who pushed you? And I'm like, if anything, it was the exact opposite. Really expensive. And I think if I were to one day be like, hey, I don't want to do it anymore, she'd be like, oh God, thank God. But it was definitely something I wanted to do. And a lifestyle I just kind of fell into. Even when I got to a point where it wasn't as fun anymore, it was all that I knew and all my friends were there. So I just kind of kept with it. But my mom had always been so supportive of me. And being a Caribbean mom, she also made sure that came with knowing that, hey, you can be an athlete, but your school is just important. And for me, piano at the time. So she's just always been an example of strength, grace, and just a powerhouse. What she's been able to do with her life, coming from Jamaica and making an incredible life for myself here. She's always inspiring to me.
When they interviewed your mom, when Oprah called, She said, listen, it's all Tay. Like, what you see here is her drive and her hard work. It's all her. She's put in the work. Can you tell us what that was like when you got that call and what happened? Like, the process when you got that. I don't know if it's an email or a letter that they send, you know, saying we're considering you. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I received an email on the accident anniversary. So the 12 years to the day of my accident anniversary, I wake up to an email from one of her assistant editors from O Magazine saying that they found my business online and wanted to try one of everything to be considered to be a part of the December issue. And I was like, what is going on? And I thought it was fake and I deleted it, especially with the business not even at that time being 2 years old and considering the fact that I was about to shut my business down in January. So it just didn't seem real, but it ended up being very real. We went through months and rounds of testing and consideration. And yeah, we got confirmed. And it's kind of like holding your breath. And for me, holding in a massive secret for so long because you have to sign all these forms and NDAs and all that. But I feel really, really, really lucky to have been chosen. If you think of how many businesses there are in the world, even in America, must be millions. And so to be one of the, I think there's 60 something on the list this year, is kind of crazy.
It is. And when you think of the fact that we're in Canada,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, being Canadian.
Exactly, and being Canadian, because I know what that's like as an author too, that you're competing from here with the best in the state. And it's difficult to stand out because it's such a crowded market, which is why I'm so proud of you and just so proud of your journey. But I wanted to, because you mentioned that you were actually going to shut the business down in January. And I want to get a sense of what that was like. And I'm sure that was, yeah, that was before COVID probably, right?
Well, so in January, yeah, it was kind of like there's rumblings of it, but I go through 2020 in news headlines. So at the time, I think it was like when the Australia wildfires were happening. And then COVID didn't really become a massive thing until March. And at least on my radar. But in January, I had a very honest conversation with my mom. And I was like, hey, I believe in the brand so much, but we're not doing the numbers I thought we would do. It was very stressful, especially when you put so much of yourself into something and you're not necessarily in the position you want to be in. And I always said, I'm like, if I just got in front of the right eyes, I feel like people would be able to see my baby brand and see the potential it has. And she told me, you know, if you want to stop, give it a few more months and then make that decision then. And then COVID hit. And I was like, oh, if my brand goes under, I can blame it on COVID. It'll be great. And then Black Lives Matter kind of became the spotlight. And that's when the shift happened, because you had a combination of people being stuck at home, COVID, and people wanting to buy Black because of supporting Black-owned businesses. And so we are a Black-owned e-commerce business, and it actually helped us significantly. And I feel, and I know it's hard to say that because I know how devastating these last few months have been for so many different businesses, but I think that e-commerce businesses have been able to find a little bit of a leg up in this respect.
So yeah, I heard of lots of Black-owned businesses and female, you know, entrepreneurs who said they got a bump, you know, because of that recognition of the need for more Black support. Did you find that it was that much more to help give you hope that, okay, maybe this could work?
You know what? It did, but then it kind of, you always have in that mindset of, is this temporary? Because I think there's been so many times in our history where, you know, something bad will happen in the Black community and then people are like, yeah, rah, rah, rah. Like, support Black, and then everyone goes back to normal. And so my fear was being excited about having a shine from people shopping Black and owned, and definitely seeing an increase of sales, but then also with the fear of, like, let this not cloud my judgment of longevity. Like, there's no guarantee that this is going to be a real shift in people's mindset. But I also kept in mind the fact that I'm like, my whole goal was to get in front of the right eyes, because I know once we get our product to you, you're going to fall in love with it and you're going to want to order again. So it was kind of like a slight bit of confidence that this might last with a slight bit of regular fear.
I know how that feels. I know exactly how that feels, especially when, you know, I launched a book. It was the same thing. I remember thinking, you know, like, so it was a viral article that I wrote and it gained lots of traction. And I remember thinking, what if, you know, the article gains the traction, but then, you know, I put this book out there and it doesn't. So I know exactly how that feels. So can you tell us, and can you describe the magnitude of the impact that Oprah had on the brand? Because, you know, like I was on the site and there are a few that are sold out. And I figured, oh, this must be the Oprah effect. So can you describe a bit, so that people can quite, you know, like probably grasp the magnitude of the Oprah effect? What has that been like?
I mean, it's been life-changing for sure. Because Oprah, I always say, like, when you think of influencers, you think of the Kylie Jenners of the world, you think of, like, you know, people like that. But when you really think about it, Oprah has been a person who has always been influential, but also reaches and spans so many different age ranges. Like, people who are 20 love Oprah, and people who are 65 love Oprah. And she has always been someone you can consistently trust throughout her entire career. And so when you have someone like her be like, hey, this is my favorite thing, it comes with a level of recognition and respect that I'm so grateful to be a part of, because so many people, whether it be corporate, like we've had so many different corporate opportunities, we've had opportunities now with celebrities and just so many other things that are kind of in the horizon that I can't necessarily talk about, but projects now that we're working on with different people. And it's been extremely exciting, extremely humbling. And if anyone has ever doubted her effect, please let this be your lesson to know that she will change your life.
I wish you could share some of those details, but I know that you probably can't, because it's just so exciting to hear about it. And I know for many people listening, they're like, wow, this almost sounds like a fairy tale. When I look at your packaging, gorgeous. Did you just, you know, just envision this luxury brand that, because I, as far as I'm concerned, like I know you mentioned, you know, reaching out to David's Tea at first and trying to get them on board. But when I look at your branding and the way you put this business forward, it's really impressive. I'm just wondering how that branding came about. How did that happen?
When I decided to start a business, I always knew that, like, I couldn't just be like everyone else. And being a massive consumer myself, I do my fair share of online shopping. I think being in my wheelchair, like I get out, but if I can get it delivered to me, why not? And being also a millennial, we like very flashy things and things that make us happy and aesthetically pleasing. And I've always had a very aesthetically pleasing aesthetic in my life. And so when I was thinking about the brand, I knew I wanted to market myself in the luxury aspect, because if I feel like if I'm offering an organic product, what is going to set me apart from my audience? And doing a lot of research into the tea business, you know, you have your Tetleys, you have your Twinings, but it's old and it's not fun and it's not new and it's not exciting. I wanted people to have products and accessories that when you receive it, you wouldn't mind if someone came knocked on your door and you had your tea stuff out on the table, because it looks beautiful and it blends in with your home. And something where when you unbox your product, you want to instantly share it on social media because you're like, this is so pretty. Like, I have to show someone. And that's something we've seen. And I had that, I kept that in mind in every single aspect of the design process, even down to our name, Cup of Tea. Te in Spanish is tea. I knew I wanted to instantly ship to the U.S. as well. Their second language is Spanish. Te is a playoff of my name. And it's one of those things too. I love logos where the more you look at the logo, you see more. And our U is actually in the shape of a cup. Our accent on the E is the shape of the leaf. And so just like those little fine details were extremely important to me and something I spent months and months and months just hashing out.
Of course, that attention to detail certainly pays off in terms of starting, establishing, and growing a brand for sure. And I had also read somewhere about points that you made about influencer marketing and your approach to influencer marketing. And I just wanted to ask you about that, because I think you mentioned that, you know, you started off maybe thinking that maybe the bigger influencers would make like a bigger splash than smaller influencers, but then maybe you changed your mind somewhat. And if people are listening in and they're thinking about launching a business or growing their business and the role that influencers, you know, can have, can you tell us a bit about your thoughts and your experience?
Yes, of course. And that is something where when we talk about mistakes and learning, well, not mistakes, but learning lessons, I learned a lot. I learned very quickly that numbers of followers does not equate to return on investment. For example, I spent $4,000 on one influencer who resulted in zero return on investment. And that was devastating. But then in return, like, I'm not spending any more money on influencers. I started reaching out to just local influencers with maybe 1,000 or 2,000 followers, and they have brought back and returned thousands and thousands of dollars. Because again, it all comes down to, do the people they speak to trust them that this is not just an ad, but actually something that they're interested in? And I've been able to craft, and slowly I'm starting to expand, a group of influencers who really believe in the brand, who have been around since the beginning and just organically talk about it all the time. And that builds up trust, and that builds up the recognition that they actually do use the product. And beyond that, when I started, my business plan was to pick a different influencer every 6 months to create a tea with, have them market it back to their audience and see how that goes. And we did that with one person, which not a lot of people know about because it's completely gone off her website. But what ended up happening is, when she was going through a very difficult financial time, she was a YouTuber. She started OnlyFans. And I don't know if you know what OnlyFans is, but it's a very, very popular, especially since the pandemic, site where people can post their explicit photos to make money. And you can imagine, I have her plastered all over my website, my Instagram. I wake up one morning and start seeing messages and DMs from people being like, is this the influencer you're working with? And immediately had to let her go, do damage control. She had breached our contract. And I feel really, at the time, it was devastating, because I had put so much money into developing her tea, branding, everything. But it's also a blessing, because I knew if we kept her, and if that didn't happen when it did, we would have never gotten Oprah. And Oprah came a few months after that. So it's a lot of learning. And I would say that if you are starting a business, start with local influencers who you know actually and organically would use your product.
Some good lessons there. Because I mean, even for me, like as I think about moving forward, these are some really good lessons. And I just wanted to follow up with a question about that, because you mentioned that the return on investment on the $4,000 influencer, let's just say that, was not as great. It was basically zero, as opposed to...
It was zero, not base, zero.
Zero, right? And then the local, smaller niche or like micro influencers turned out more. Can you give us an idea? I wonder how much I would need to spend, what price range, and how do I make my budget? What was your process?
Honestly, I have spent on... So I'm thinking about two influencers in particular. I have spent $150 in the last 2 years on both of them. So that's $300. But truthfully, when I reached out to them, I was like, I will send you this product for free. Would love it if you could take some photos. And if you like it, talk about it. And they have not stopped talking about it. And I now have them a part of something called our affiliate program, where they have an incentive. So their incentive is, they get, if somebody uses their code, they get 15%. Their customer gets a discount. And it's been a great way of giving them motivation to work for it. You know what I mean? Because the more they talk about it, is the more likely someone's going to buy it. We've seen great, like one of the girls, she's brought in like $1,200 worth of revenue. And she has like 1,000 followers. And she talks about it all the time. And it's great, because she gets an incentive, I get an incentive. I get free content, which is king. Everyone knows content is king. And whenever she posts, I get to repost it. and it's been very beneficial.
Yeah, no, that sounds great for sure. And that's so, so good in terms of the lessons there for people listening in.
Always start with giving people, offering people. Many, many small influencers will take product in exchange for services. Once you get up into higher numbers of followers and engagement, that changes, but start small.
Just to wrap up, I just wanted to talk a bit about the personal financial identity quiz that you did. Listeners know, I've developed this personal financial identity framework that came out of my book, Holistic Wealth. And so readers came back to me after they read the book and they're like, so what are the identities? How can I know what personal financial identity I am? And so I didn't quite have an answer then, but I worked hard all over the summer and came up with this framework on a mission, trying to get people to think more about it, to become just more self-aware, to be able to identify with others in their own framework categories, just to learn from each other and just to see where the strengths weaknesses are. And so I know you took the quiz, Taylor, and so I just wanted you to share with the audience what your results were and kind of what resonated with you.
Yes, so I loved the quiz. I ended up being a maximalist, I think that's what it's called.
Yeah.
And it describes someone who's a lavish spender, go large, go home. And I, you know, at first I was like, what? But then again, it makes complete sense to me. Like, obviously, I created a luxury brand. Like, I like, and I've mentioned before, like, I love aesthetically pleasing things. I have treated myself to luxury purchases. And, but at the same time, I'm also very, very, very careful with my money. Like, things like that, I work really, really, really hard for. And but I always have enough for a rainy day. So I live my life, but I also am not reckless.
Yes, I think you make some great points because I'm not surprised that you're the maximalist. Just looking on the brand, looking at how great everything looks, the quality of it too, because the boxes, just everything, the quality of it is just amazing. And so I have a soft spot in my heart for the maximalist because I know the maximalist too has a big heart. And I know through your brand, you're giving back to mental health, which is such an important cause. And that's why I want people to get people talking, because then they're like, oh, well, if I'm a maximalist, am I doing something wrong? As you mentioned, like, you're not squandering. You're very careful about what you spend on, but you really love aesthetically pleasing things, which a lot of us do too. So thanks for sharing that. So Taylor, can you tell our audience, for those listening in and hearing your story for the first time, where they can reach you on social media and the website?
Of course. So my personal Instagram is at TaylorLN, so TaylorLN. And my business Instagram is Cup of Tay Shop, so CUPOFTE Shop. And you can shop our website at www.cupoftea.com, and that's CUPOFTE.com.
Okay, great. And Taylor, I just wanted to thank you again for sharing your phenomenal story and being here with us and sharing all the great tips and strategies that you did. Thank you so much. I'm sure many people listening into this will be so inspired. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for joining us this week on Holistic Wealth with Keisha Blair. Make sure to visit our website, keishablair.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS so you will never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. Are you a member of the Institute on Holistic Wealth? If not, what are you waiting for? Go to InstituteOnHolisticWealth/memberships to choose your membership plan and join. As a member, you get so many perks. Free worksheets, advice, coaching, and a member's workshop to design an intentionally designed life. You need to figure out your life purpose? Take the Build Your Life Purpose Portfolio online self-paced course. You're struggling with all your money decisions? Take the free financial identities quiz and then take the course. You recently had a breakup, job loss, or experienced the death of a loved one? Take the Holistic Healing Course. You need an overall plan to achieve holistic wealth? We will help you figure out your holistic wealth blueprint. And of course, if you want to start making money by helping others achieve holistic wealth, become a certified holistic wealth consultant. Regardless of what career you've got, the Institute will show you how to increase your income and walk in your purpose. The sooner you join, the sooner you start to achieve a more holistically wealthy lifestyle. And you're going to want to stay for a very long time. So go to InstituteOnHolisticWealth/memberships to join. If you haven't read the book yet, pick up a copy of the award-winning best-selling Holistic Wealth, 32 Life Lessons to Help You Find Purpose, Prosperity, and Happiness.